Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And when you are Vivendi, you have a lot of IPs and you want to protect not only the IPs, but the one creating the IPs, the creators. And for us, the creative industry is really at risk today. I'd say we have thousands of jobs at risk if we don't protect the content. Protecting content or protecting news to fight against disinformation is really the issue of the year.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
Hello, Avery. I'm great. I'm still in Austin. You are no longer here, which I'm very sad about.
I'm bummed to have missed you.
I know. We literally miss each other by hours. Like, I'm coming to your event. You're like, I'm on the way to the airport. So
your plane was delayed, but I did get to see some CoinDesk folks there, which was wonderful. It was great to have them. They joined us for a little tacos and tech happy hour vibes at the Gallery Innovation House, which was super fun, though we missed you.
It did look amazing. I saw the photos. What was your general take on South By this year?
So South By is always interesting because it's really long, right? And I think there's like 12 days of, you know, technically that exist within South By. This year was interesting, a lot on AI, a lot less on crypto, a lot of sort of mainstream brands. And I think specifically the sweet spot of like not tiny, but not massive, like that sort of medium-sized brand. I saw a lot of those kind of brands activating, showing up, doing cool things, looking to connect with creators. And also music-wise, maybe it was just my bias, but I wasn't really hearing that much about emerging artists in that sense. Mm. But it was great. I was there for 36 hours. Our programming, I thought, was really well done. And, you know, popped by a couple of other cool and interesting things. Got to hang out with the A16Z folks. Got to check out some of our brand partner stuff. Got to walk around a little bit, you know, hear a couple of folks give interesting talks and, you know, stop by FQ. They always do an amazing job at South By at the Boathouse. Kind of get a pulse on what's happening. What do you think so far? You're there. You're live.
I'm literally live in Austin on East 6th Street. It's interesting because, so one thing about the music, which you mentioned, music, I don't think technically starts till the 14th this year, which often they would start them together with interactive and make it a party. So I think that was an interesting decision, which is like slowly drip out the opportunity to make it longer. Because South By always is way too long and most people come in for 3 or 4 days. So I think they wanted maybe to make it more distinct. But I think with that, it feels a little quieter than I've seen South By maybe ever. So yes, there's a lot of people around, but it's not the kind of people that were here for like peak South By. The activations, brand activations are sparse, which also I thought was interesting.
Really? I didn't think they were sparse.
Well, I guess I'm remembering when like Nike would build giant half pipes and things like that. And then you'd, you know, or Amex would build a pavilion. And so like where I'm staying relatively close to like the LaCroix House, which seems like one of the more busy ones. And that one has like 100 people online and it's to get free water.
Delta? Did you check out Delta?
Delta seems to be woven into the whole conference in a macro way, which that I have seen. I haven't gone to like their thing in the convention center. And I saw the thing at the airport, which I thought was great. But even still, though, I feel like it's not like the days where every block was a big brand activation. The other thing I think is interesting, I want to get your take on, is there seems to be a lot less crypto here right now. I'm speaking tomorrow at Boys Club's event. So I wonder if people are maybe coming a little bit later and that on the early side, maybe it was much less crypto. But at the highs of so many of these tokens with the sort of energy around crypto right now, I just thought that there would be maybe a little bit more showing up, but maybe just like Art Basel and CES and some of these other large experiences are the ones that are attracting that audience. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, it's a good question. It was something I was thinking about as well, because I mentioned I stopped by a couple of crypto related things. And one big sort of macro observation is, I mean, crypto is running right now, right? Like, this is a great time. Things are looking green. And I was actually expecting a little bit more of like on the ground buzz, like, you know, your Uber drivers talking about it and people in the streets mentioning it, or even people sort of who I know are interested in crypto or been part of that journey bringing it up. And like on my phone, I was getting a lot of questions and comments and thoughts, but in person, I think it came up a total of like one time outside of the crypto specific functions I went to. And what I was hearing from both sort of founders and innovators and folks who I know who used to work at Yuga or used to work at these NFT marketplaces is the vast majority of them have pivoted sort of what they were doing before into something else, whether that's them returning to, you know, their roots or them taking the company in a new direction. Particularly those who are sort of building with like community in mind. And of course, with that comes growth expectations. I think it seems like a lot of pivoting. And it wasn't just from like one or two or five or 10 people. Like that was kind of a macro sentiment that I was hearing, which was interesting because like it's objectively such a great time in crypto right now.
I think there's also two things, which is I think we haven't still really seen how much of that intersection between crypto and AI is going to happen. And I think whether that is the validation of information with some big blockchain projects coming out like Near, who are really refocusing on the idea that they can be the provenance layer of it. I talked with a woman last night who's part of the Aura blockchain team, and they're seeing a ton of activity right now and luxury coming on. So I do think there's that piece of it, which has a great overlay into AI. The other thing is, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, but crypto stablecoins are the perfect payment mechanism for AI agents. The idea that you can do full cross-border, almost lagless payments on micro levels utilizing stablecoins, I think is going to be a big, big thing in AI. But I think we're a year, 2 years away from that. So I do think there's a lot of people who are building, to your point, the pivot may be, oh, we see this as a really nice intersection. But on the other hand, I think that crypto also may be moving to other events, right? We just had ETH Denver. We just had NFT Paris. We have Consensus coming up soon. We have VCon coming up. I mean, all of these things are more native for the audience, frankly. And I think that marketing spend around big events is a lagging indicator of what's happening in the market. So I wonder if maybe at the end of this year, early next year, we're actually seeing what's happening today.
Next time in Austin, Consensus.
Exactly. Gonna make it big.
You know, I think you're probably right, Sam. And I think that the purpose of, you know, those companies activating a place like South By is to reach a new audience versus sort of just like reinvesting in the people who are already interested in this. And I mean, you just mentioned Boys Club, like they're activating at South By. I think South By is such a melting pot, and that's why people love it, because it's not just one type of person, right? It's marketers, it's musicians, it's blockchain enthusiasts, it's creators, it's innovators, like all kind of coming together in equal measure. And I think that's why South By is interesting.
Yes. I also think that there's such a sentimental or nostalgic overlap of like lifestyles of crypto and what happens at South By. For example, one of the most popular tracks here is the psychedelics track, which the crypto audience also really happens to love. Wellness indicates really high for crypto. There's a ton of that. Last night I went to a sound bath where half of it was IRL and half of it was people playing like singing bowls in MetaQuest headsets, which was really bizarre. But I do think that like that stuff gets the same kind of audience of like those who are culture.
Was it like put on by Meta, or that was just like put on by?
No,
like,
Meta and the Trip app, which I guess is their, I don't know if Trip is a drug term or it's just a let's bring on a meditative journey. But they put it on, which I was also kind of impressed that they were doing that. But it was also funny, the idea that like you have this wonderful and very talented team of performers playing live for you, and then embedded into the live were two people in headsets playing virtual instruments. And I was like, wait, but this is like, you have live people in front of you. Take off your headset and be part of the experience.
Enjoy the IRL component.
Right, exactly. So it was pretty funny. Speaking of experiences, going to our next story, I did want to talk to you a little bit about what seems to be a problem you and I have talked about so often, but it just happens time and time again when it comes to new layers of social media. A story just came out on The Defiant about how Farcaster has seen a 60% decrease in user base. I think you called this very much a couple of months ago, but they, you know, we're seeing about 40,000 users a day. Now they're down to 16,000 users a day. And just like for our listeners, for context, there's 350,000 tweets sent every single minute. There's 625 million videos watched on TikTok every single minute. So the idea that 16,000 users is a number that we should not be worried about, it's just so small when it comes to the scale of social that it does make me worried about how much hype these things get and then just very quickly fall off. I don't know if there's a place for truly niche social media when you need to scale with your VC money the way that folks like that have raised. What are your thoughts on it?
You know, I think I mentioned this a few months back. There's always these like new apps that are coming out. There's these new services. There's these new things. And like they get hot for a second and then oftentimes they cool off. Sometimes that's the next TikTok, right? And that speed to adoption like really, really matters. Sometimes you can have these apps that are super popular and then they disappear too. So change is the only constant. Farcaster, I think, has an interesting value proposition. I remember us talking about the onboarding and how that was challenging, right? And like, why would millions of people go through that when there's so much friction? Your point around raising is interesting because they raised somewhat from their users as well, right?
Well, that plus A16Z and a bunch of other big VCs.
Yeah, but they actually had users paying to use it, which I think is like inherently different than a lot of the other like social, you know, their social peer set. The thing about VC, though, is like they know that it's like zero or 100, right? Like yes. A lot of them don't work out. A few of them do. So I feel like they're eyes wide open going into those conversations. I never, when we chatted originally about it, I didn't get on Farcaster. I'm still not active, very active on Farcaster. I think I've used it a few times because for me, it's a lot of friction. And also 16,000 people is not that many. But I know right. Some people really value the depth of the engagement. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I don't think people recognize the seismic shift that it took for TikTok to become one of the top social media apps. And granted, it was built on Musical.ly, which already had such a user base. But it is so hard to create a new social app that people care about. I mean, I just think about Peach. I think about Spill. I think about all of these other ones that have come out that get hot for 35 seconds and then they go away. And it does become a real challenge. And also, do we need that many more? Even Discord seems to be waning in terms of people's usage. They're just tired of it. So it is something that I keep thinking that the decentralized world feels like they need something, but then they're posting about why they feel they need it on Twitter.
I completely agree because that's where they get reach and engagement. And they're like, yes. Their social strategy matters. Like speaking to a lot of Web3 founders, they're like, oh yeah, our content strategy is really key. And it's like, okay, well, you're just feeding the machine that you're trying to fight against,
right.
Which is somewhat of a necessary evil. Even social platforms have to advertise on their peer set. So I completely get that. But Sam, I'm curious what you think about sort of the evolution of these decentralized social platforms, because, you know, we can observe that very famously, Yuga hired a bunch of executives, big executives from more traditional companies, and they've now sort of cycled out. Do you think that we're going to see this for a lot of the Web3 native companies, the crypto native companies who brought in these hitters from like the Web2 world, and now they're realizing that may or may not be a fit?
I had a conversation last night with two very well-known and respected founders in the Web3 space who both said, in regards to Yuga specifically, that even though Daniel was a very good badge hire for them, in that he'd been running Activision, he knew gaming, they wanted to go into gaming, that he never really understood the community. He was never able to get and be a part of the community. And he had a hard time making that switch to what it meant to be a Web2 gaming CEO to a Web3 gaming CEO. But I think it does show that there is a lot of immaturity in the system. And there is still, which is the Farcaster problem, the issue that still to this day, the thing people are rewarding most is monetization. And when you're on Facebook, when you're on TikTok, when you are on Twitter, you are rewarding engagement, entertainment, education, hot takes, trolling. It's not whether I'm going to get rich with this. And I think that is something that if I was a Web2 founder, I would want to come in with a bigger purview, the way Ben Leventhal told us. You know, he's building consumer tech. He's not building a Web3 company. And that's where I think we have to see whether the breakout happens. We still haven't seen anything other than Coinbase and Binance be a successful crypto app. You know, there's nothing else with hundreds of millions of users. And those apps are doing great right now. Why? Because people want to get rich on crypto. I was at a late night event on Saturday, and someone said to me, should I be buying Bitcoin? And I said, well, what do you want out of it? And he said, I want outsized returns. And I said, well, then maybe.
And you're like, not financial advice.
Not financial advice, but maybe you missed the boat on that one. So, you know, why don't you buy Pepe? Is not what I actually said.
Again, not financial advice. You should absolutely research and understand Bitcoin. Whether or not you decide to put your money into it, that's your call. But to understand it is to understand the cultural elements of it, the financial elements of it, and the history of it, which I think lays a really strong foundation for the future.
Well, and the inevitability of virtual economies, that there, you know, let's quote Ian Rogers in this, there will absolutely be more digital assets in the world tomorrow than there are today. And that's a constant. And people will be utilizing digital payment systems, whether it's PayPal or Venmo, right? Or it's USDC or Bitcoin. The idea that you have to be participating in the future of money and that the future of money may be programmable is something that I think anyone should be interested in, unless your goal is to be completely off the grid and you just want to like pay with, you know, the loose change in your pocket, which is totally fine for some people.
Well, a lot of, you know, just to bring it full circle, no one in Austin even takes cash anymore. I did notice that like everywhere was like, we're cash-free establishment. Mm-hmm. And that just goes to the point we're talking about now. So Sam, great chat. Have the best time in Austin.
Absolutely.
I want to hear your full report.
Sounds good. After the break, we are going to play the interview I had earlier this week with Fabien Offrechter. I'm probably butchering his name, but my French is not great. But Fabien is VP at Vivendi. Vivendi is one of the world's largest media companies, and they are based in Europe and Asia, and they have some properties here. And it was actually really fascinating to talk to Fabien about what he is trying to do, which is extremely ambitious to the media ecosystem and also touches on a lot of what you and I have talked about, which is the validation of media and information. So with that, after the break, come back, listen to my interview with Fabien. Avery, we'll see you next week. Consensus 2024. Global crypto regulation, the disruptive power of AI, the rise of tokenization. Consensus is the one event where experts convene to talk about the ideas shaping our digital future. Join developers, investors, founders, brands, policymakers, and plenty more in Austin, Texas from May 29th through the 31st. The 10th annual Consensus is curated by CoinDesk to feature the industry's most sought-after speakers and provide unparalleled networking opportunities and unforgettable experiences. Take 15% off registration with the code GENC50. Register now at consensus.coindesk.com, and I'll see you there. All right, welcome back to Gen C. We are here with Fabien Offrechter. Fabien is the VP at Vivendi, but also happens to be the mayor of Verneuil-sur-Seine, which is a city in France, which we're also going to talk about. So Fabien, first off, how do you balance being an executive at a large media company? You're focused on Gen AI and Web3, but you're also the mayor of a city in France. How does that work out for you day to day?
Well, actually, it's pretty cool to be able to balance between a public function and a corporate job. To be honest, in France, being a mayor is not a job and you cannot leave just being a mayor, except if you are retired. I'm not. And so therefore, for me, it's something obvious. I'm from my city. I've always been living in this city. This is a wonderful city. This is actually the city of Tocqueville, the last headquarter of Eisenhower before Paris. So plenty of history and also now of technology, since we've been trying some very funny experiences.
I love that. So maybe just to frame up for our listeners, especially the ones in the US, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Vivendi and the media empire that it is, and the types of businesses that you're in, just sort of to sort of let our audience know all the different areas that you touch in the entertainment world.
Yeah, actually, Vivendi is a very, very old company. It's been created in 1853, so it's been quite a while. At the time, the founder was actually Napoleon III. Pretty cool. It was a water company. It's been built as a water company. But through the time, the interesting thing about Vivendi is that it's been a real estate company after, then a financial holding, and it started to be an entertainment, advertising, and gaming empire. Why an empire? Because actually, it's the leader in Europe and one of the leaders worldwide when it comes to communication, advertising, entertainment, gaming, but also video with Canal Plus and Dailymotion. We have a lot of different business units from Lagardère to Prisma Media. Some are very urban, some are very global, Dailymotion, but also L'Olympia, which is a very French famous concert hall. And now we also have Lagardère with other relais, for example, that you could find in airports. So it's a very decentralized group. Each of the BUs are very different. And in such a way that actually Vivendi remain Vivendi with different activities. And I think it's very meaningful when it comes to why we are seizing this opportunity in terms of tech. We're not looking for the tech. We're looking actually just for the best model suiting our identity.
From TV to magazines, gaming to media agencies, how do you see Web3 and Gen AI being involved in these businesses in your role to help bring them into the future?
Well, we've been working in the shadow for a few years. Myself, I launched a few years ago the blockchain department in the communication and advertising agency Havas. Our goal at the time was really to advise corporate clients, but also startups and governments. And by the way, crypto clients, they were my favorite. But at the time, everyone was very afraid internally about the little startups that we were advising, from Binance to Tezos. These little startups felt at the time very shaky. But the interesting thing is that all the knowledge we've been gathering from our clients is actually very meaningful in terms of solving issues for our group. Why? Because actually the main pain points within our industry are first, let's say, protection of the intellectual property of IPs, which has been for us a very pain point for a while. I'm born in the 90s with Canal Plus facing hacking and plenty of a hack about contents. It's nothing new here. But this is something very, very key for us. This is really core business. Second thing, I'd say with the disappearance of third-party cookies, there's really something to rethink, remodelize. There's a need of a new way for brands to connect and to understand their clients, their public. And for me, the Web3 is providing a real solution when it comes to really solving this issue. Usually what I'm saying is that I'm not selling blockchain. I'm just trying to identify our main pain point and to find the best technology in order to solve these issues. And here, these two issues are really core business issues. Then I could go with plenty of other examples. We are supposed to launch for the Paris Blockchain Week in April all our POCs. I'll come back on some examples that I will tease for you. But actually, it's something for us which is super key. I'll go for copyright on one side and other side, decentralized CRM.
I want to dig a little bit deeper into tokenization of media, because I believe that that sort of is part of all of what you're talking about when you talk about how kind of to bring a media brand on chain. So I think all of us are worried about the idea of misinformation, understanding where and who we're getting our news from. And it does feel that there's an opportunity to utilize some sort of infrastructure that can tokenize and validate information for media companies. And that could be whether it's one of your magazines or what Canal Plus is doing, or it can be, you know, down to news and information specifically that's put on social media. Do you have a take on media provenance and the need for us to be able to validate these ideas against what we know can be very disinformation or misinformation rich environments like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram? How do we utilize these systems to help protect our future?
Well, you are absolutely right. I mean, for me, this issue is key for two reasons, which are very different, but the solution will be the same. First, fighting against fake news and deepfakes. Second, actually protecting the one creating content. Because if you don't, it's very easy. It's going to be very easy to steal the property. And when you are Vivendi, you have a lot of IPs and you want to protect not only the IPs, but the one creating the IPs, the creators. And for us, the creative industry is really at risk today. I'd say we have thousands of jobs at risk if we don't protect the content. Protecting content or protecting news to fight against disinformation is really the issue of the year. I'd say even the one probably of our century. And actually, there's really here a case where the Web3 is providing the real solution. I'm currently working with a range of different players, but most of them are public, with the C2PA initiative, the CAI on the other side, and more globally with European media. Actually, it's possible to protect a content just with the way you would mint an NFT. Turning any photo, any video, any even text into an NFT is a way to protect it. You have an owner, you have the provenance. And actually, provenance is actually the name of the project worked with Microsoft, because actually this is exactly what we want to do. We don't want to create a system where the tech would say, this is true, this is fake. We want the tech to be able to provide the ownership, the provenance. And for us, this is super key. Because, for example, if I have a video of you, which is owned by CoinDesk, I'm going to say, okay, this is probably true. But if actually I have a video of you owned by someone else, I might say, okay, maybe it's a fake one, and it could be. And today, this is a real risk when it comes to deepfake, when it comes to fake news, for sure. But today, it's nothing compared to what's coming. Because today, I used to say ChatGPT, even Sora, they are actually the Bitcoin step of the Gen AI. It's really the real beginning. Actually, if we don't protect our content, it's going to be super difficult to distinguish the truth and the fake. And I used to say something with CEOs. I used to tell them, okay, guys, you have a lot of assistants. Very good. But tomorrow, how are you going to work with them? Because actually, they will not be able to call you. Because if they do, you will be at risk. And they will be at risk. Because I could steal your voice on any YouTube video or anything and call them with your voice, and it will be super easy tomorrow. The tech is already mature. It's just a question of democratization. So here, the NFT tech that everyone was laughing at just because it was just monkeys with tongues and everything. Okay, that there's two faces on the NFT. One is about creation, investment, etc. And it's pretty cool, by the way. On the other side, you have the real application for the industry and for even maybe saving the democracy, to use big words. But actually, this is really the issue. If you don't do a way, if you don't protect the contents, there's really the democracy which is at risk. And on the other side, so many jobs. And the same tech, NFTs, is also a way to protect IPs and to monetize the IPs and to do something else. If you program your content through the NFT, you can also build a decentralized CRM, mm-hmm. which was actually my second point. I mean, the certification of content is the door to something very, very interesting. The one of renewing relationship with your client in full transparency, GDPR compliant if you are in France, but more globally, I'd say, in a very much more ethic way. And that's something incredible. And if you think this is science fiction, just go in China where the government is doing it. Okay, China is not probably the best case because it's very centralized. But the tech is actually public blockchain that they are using to protect IPs, because this is the only tech certifying for truth. And on the other side, just go in the US, the C2P, CIA, and plenty of other groups are working on it. And I'm pretty sure that it is the only way, by the way, to guarantee safe elections for the European one in June and probably for the American one in November.
So this is fascinating. We had, maybe a month ago, we had Melody Hildebrandt from Fox. They have their Verify platform. You have your Provenance platform that you're working on, both of which seem to be looking at this idea of sourcing media down to the actual creators of it. And one of the questions I asked her, which I would love to just follow up with you on, is all of this sounds great until you need the platforms to then be able to represent that the media that you've created is yours. And one of the questions that came up when we were talking with her is, you know, it'd be amazing if you went on YouTube and it said, this is an authentic Vivendi asset, and we can verify that, and there's a little check mark. But a lot of these platforms monetize the fake as much as they monetize the real. So is it in the platform best interest, the aggregators, for them to have that badge that says this is authentic, or does that actually work against them from a business model perspective?
Well, actually, you're right. The question about, let's say, authorship provenance is actually connected to the one of virality. And the best example is probably TikTok. If you want to publish an AI video, you need to tick a box in order to say, okay, this is not a real one, this is Gen AI. Or at least this is partly Gen AI. You're going to be able to publish it, but the virality is going to be killed, basically. And this is the limit here. I believe personally that Gen AI will be probably covering something like 95% of content within 3 years and probably even within 1 year. So, you know, it's really coming. The question is not, is it a real content? Is it a fake one? The question is, you need to create a tool shared by all the platforms. And that's why C2PA is so interesting, because you need to have the same protocol and tomorrow the same regulation, by the way. But actually, this is for me the real interesting side of the tech. It's providing a way to give the provenance through a tool accepted by other players. If I come back on the crypto side, this is exactly the same issue about the walletization of activities. You know, the wallet being the way to open and to check, and behind the real issue on the wallet is the simplicity. If I don't have a simple wallet, my grandma is never going to use it. Here it's the same. If I want to have a way to protect content, it has to be simple. And this is the tricky part.
And then finally, because I just want to come back to what you said around the decentralized CRM, because that's also fascinating. In your mind, at some point, you have all these media assets that are on chain, and you're saying someone could come in and the relationship really is happening as part of a smart contract, as part of a relationship that's happening through a wallet that gives you a lot more transparency as well into who's accessing your information, who's utilizing the APIs, and your relationship to them. Am I reading that correctly?
Well, let me give you a little scoop. We are actually going to launch in April the first media, if I'm correct, built with a token-gated system. The idea is very simple. Basically, what we do is that we have a lot of brands who launch a lot of NFTs. They are usually having no utility. We give them the opportunity just to pay as they would pay advertising, as they are able to pay just to give the opportunity of the holder to have for free the access of the media. And then they have the full traceability of what the readers are reading, and therefore what they can target them with, what kind of information. This will be Capital Magazine, one of the Prisma Media, big French and European media. It's actually, if I'm correct, more read than Les Echos in France. So it's pretty big. And actually, for us, it's very interesting because it's not just a POC. It's really a test to see if the token can really replace in a real big scale as third-party cookies.
Well, super excited to see how that comes along in April. Fabien, I want to change gears a little bit because I know you're probably, like me, been pretty fascinated with the rise of gaming and especially around this sort of hybrid future with all this new sort of these headsets and AR hardware coming out. Are you looking through the lens of kind of this future metaverse, which has been on this wild up and down ride, but through the ideas of media entertainment? I mean, do you believe that soon we will be sitting in headsets, watching the shows that you guys produce in this kind of more 4D environment? Are you guys already thinking through that? Or are you still saying we think people will digest media in many of the same ways that they typically do?
Well, I'd say yes, yes, and no. Yes, we are currently working with all the big players, and we've been the first one to work with the Apple Vision Pro in order to produce new content. Yes, this is true. Yes, we are also working on metaverse activities. We've been one of the first, not to say the only one, in the entertainment game to launch real activities on Sandbox, for example. And we are currently supporting a range of initiatives in the metaverse. Yes, but in the meantime, no, I don't think the real way will be headset and complicated metaverse way. Today, Sandbox is very nice, but it's just, the name is identity. It's just a sandbox. For me, the real metaverse is not a headset. It could be just a screen. It could be very simple. The idea of the metaverse is having a digital ecosystem where you have objects with a real value, tokenized objects. And this is not really existing if you consider that you need today to have a wallet, which is going to be very difficult to use and that no one is going really to use. For me, the real limit today of the metaverse is not the headset. It's actually the wallet. And without banks coming in the game, I think there will still be a limit. For me, by the way, this is a big opportunity for banks. They are very afraid of crypto and everything because of the cypherpunk and crypto anarchist reputation. But actually, it's far away. And we need to focus on what's coming. The metaverse is coming. Because if tomorrow you can connect directly your bank account with the headset or with your computer even, or even your phone, and if you can just test, I don't know, glasses in your phone in order to see if they are very nice and just buy it after, well, this is a way to have real activations. I even discovered, for example, in China, they launched a metaverse just for students in order for them to discover the history of the country. Emmanuel Macron in France said during the campaign in 2022 that he was actually going to launch the same thing. So there's real activations possible. We believe metaverse is not yet existing, but that it will be existing. And we believe in the metaverse, like we believe in the Web3. But there's still big limits, and the bigger limit actually not the one of the headset. It is the headset with the cost and the fact that it's very far from being perfect. But the real limit for the metaverse is actually the wallet.
I love that way of thinking because I agree. I think that wallet is also the idea of identity. and interoperability around identity, which I think is also an area that a lot of us believe in. And brands, media companies, decentralized systems all kind of want to understand more about the people involved, but also be able to reward them for their participation, which is something that I think we probably both agree on.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is the wallet is the key. It's also because connecting with the issue we just mentioned before, if you don't have a simple wallet, a simple way to identify, how am I sure that I'm talking to you? And actually right now, are you sure that I'm Fabien Frachter? You can't, because there's no tech providing the certification here. And the issue is really big, because tomorrow, if you are in the metaverse trying to discuss with someone or buying something and that you are just every day and day after day scammed, you won't go in the metaverse and you'd say, okay, the metaverse is never going to work.
Mm. You also are overseeing a lot of the Gen AI work at Vivendi. Tell us what you're excited about when it comes to Gen AI mixed with the variety of media businesses that you're overseeing.
Well, you know, today the Gen AI is really at its first stage. I mean, it's very the beginning. But obviously, this is a way to improve contents. It's a way to give it's a new tool for creative. Creative people are really having new opportunities. For engineers, it's a new way to check the code, to improve the code, to go faster, to go deeper. It's a real booster for activities in our industry. But in the meantime, you feel the risk. We mentioned it. I'll give you a little story that I really enjoyed. I'm just changing my cap for a minute, but as a mayor, just back from the CES in January, I was having a lot of fun, creating a song based on Gen AI, just with Gen AI. And I said, okay, that's actually the Happy New Year season. Let's do something funny as a mayor. I'm going actually to create a song for the city, and I'm going to fake that I'm singing it at the opening of the big ceremony I'm doing for all the old people in my city. In front of 600 people, I fake singing a fully Gen AI song. And you know what? All the people believed that it was actually me singing first. But they even are now considering that it's so true. They saw it with their eyes that they are asking me to re-sing it. And it's very funny. But in the meantime, it's very scary, obviously.
That reminds me when HeyGen first came out, I recorded myself saying, you know, a couple of sentences, and then I had HeyGen convert it, you know, and it converts not just the video, the audio, but the video as well, to myself speaking French. And I sent it to a friend of mine who lives in Paris. And I said, hey, I've been really working on my French. Can you tell me what you think? And he sent me an email back saying, wow, you've come a really long way. I mean, his mind was blown. He's not in this world. But it did not even dawn on him that this could not be a real video when I said it to him. So I agree. It's pretty scary. I mean, I guess that leads me to a question of like, what are you most excited about with all of this emerging tech? But also, what are you most scared about with this emerging tech?
Well, actually, the scary part is obvious. I mean, stealing identities, new hack. Actually, from April, I'll be the new general secretary of a French association gathering all the players in the Web3 and Gen AI field about security and safety. We will be working with the authorities, the police force, the military force, army, but also on the other side, all the corporates and even as a compliance plus lawyer firms. Because for me, this is not just the scary part. This is the truth. It's coming. And when I'm hearing people saying, oh, okay, we could stop it. No, you won't stop it. It's already here. On the other side, the most interesting thing is probably the feasibility for people to become more creative. I mean, you know me, I'm really unable to draw anything. I'm really unable to code anything. And tomorrow, I'd say no code is going to be obvious because you will just be able to create an application without anything but just a prompt. You will be in a minute able to create a video or picture or photo or something, a new story. You will be becoming, let's say, a creative, even if you are not really. But for me, I'd say the limit here is that it's giving tools for mediocres to become very good. But the people already very good will just earn time. They won't become better because at some point there's a limit. And the key for our industry will be to be not only the best, but even the less expensive. It will be a question of cost behind the one of creativity. But for people like me, it's very cool to say that actually it's the revenge of social science. It's the revenge of human science. I mean, it was for years good to do mathematics and science, and still it is. But actually, for people like me who are very bad in coding and everything, we will be able to do it. And democratizing this kind of thing is something very interesting.
I love that. And I think that you speak to the best optimism that can come as well as to some of the worst fears. And we would love to keep in touch on the consortium that you're working on, because I think that we all need to be a lot more aware of these things and work together in it. Fabienne, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really enjoyed you and every conversation that we have. I really think you are very insightful. And the fact that you are building at such a scale with one of the most important media companies in the world, I think is really impressive, and people should be paying some attention to it. In addition, if anyone can, I know I am going to try to get to Vernet-sur-Seine and come see Fabienne in real life, because who doesn't want to be in France, especially in the summer? So I hope to see you soon.
No, thank you. Thank you, Sam. And actually, just to conclude, I say Vernet will hopefully become a hub in the field. We are currently working on the campus for Gen AI and Web3 and just looking for investors. So, you know, it's a beautiful story coming. And I'm sure even if it's not in Vernet, we don't know yet, it will be at least somewhere in the world. There will be a real geopolitics fight to bring the value. And I hope to be part or at least following this story.
Amazing. Thank you so much.